You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 333 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Danger Street number 5, Superman Lost number 2, Lazarus Planet, Revenge of the Gods number 3, The Flash, season 9, episode 9, It's My Party, and I'll Die If I Want To, and Superman and Lois, season 3, episode 6 of Sound Mind. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC has announced two titles coming this fall, but hasn't specified if they are ongoing or limited series. First, we have Power Girl by writer Leah Williams and artist Eduardo Panseca. Paige is enlisted to take on an ancient Kryptonian threat that arises following the events of DC's upcoming Night Terrors crossover. The second title is Fire and Ice, Welcome to Smallville by writer Joan Starr and artist Natasha Bustos. The two heroines find themselves forced to lay low in Superman's hometown after a disastrous incident in Baltimore puts them under intense scrutiny, to the point where they've even considered calling Ice's ex-boyfriend, Guy Gardner, for help. Both Power Girl No. 1 and Ice and Fire Welcome to Smallville No. 1 are due out September 5th.
I have to imagine, Drew, both of these are going to end up being miniseries. I would be really surprised if they could sustain themselves as ongoing. That being said, it'd be really cool if they could. It'd be great. I'm particularly interested in the Fire and Ice one because we just got the Human Target book. Has certainly piqued my interest in those characters. I've enjoyed those characters before. It's not like I didn't know about them or I hadn't read comics with them, but I enjoyed that story so much. I feel like it is really smart of them to be following that up with this miniseries, because I'm sure interest in those characters is higher than it's been recently.
I'm really curious if their title is kind of spun out of that, even though, you know, the story's not spinning out of that. I just meant the interest in those characters maybe spun out of that miniseries.
You've got to think, right? Like, I mean, it just logically, it's a great time to be doing those characters because you just had a, you know, high-profile miniseries featuring them. I can't imagine that's a complete coincidence. Even if it's not necessarily a plan by the publishers, it's got to be like the writers, you know, because writers read each other's stuff, that they see that series and like, oh, you know, actually that gives me an interesting idea for using those two. There has to be some, you know what I mean? There had to have been, whether it was just writers giving each other ideas or the publisher wanting to do something, I'm not sure, but I think it's really smart because I'm sure we're not the only two that have a higher interest level in JLI characters right now.
Yeah, and I remember reading Fire and Ice back during Keith Giffen's run of the Justice League, which I loved. So I'm looking forward to reading more about these characters, and it'll be interesting them going and hiding in Smallville. I'm sure we're going to get some interesting stories from that, especially if Guy Gardner gets involved.
Agreed.
All right, well, let's move on to our next bit of DC news. Amazon Prime now has 3 Bat projects coming to their streaming service. They have officially ordered 2 seasons of Batman Caped Crusader, the animated series, we announced a few weeks ago during DC News. The second project is an animated movie called Merry Little Batman. Alone in Wayne Manor on Christmas Eve, a young Damian Wayne becomes Little Batman to protect his home and Gotham from supervillains and criminals alike who have designs on the holidays. The third project is spinning off from the animated movie Merry Little Batman with an animated series called Bat Family, in which Damian, Alfred, and Batman, along with a few newcomers to Wayne Manor, will navigate the fun and frustrations of life as a super family. Now, I gotta tell you, the Merry Little Batman, that sounded an awful lot like Home Alone, the Batman version.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely seems more of like a aimed toward a younger crowd for sure. Hopefully it does well. I'm really surprised that DC is licensing this stuff out to Amazon. I mean, ultimately they're making money off of it either way, I know, but like I would really think they'd prefer that to be on Max, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't understand what they're doing. Honestly, I would think they'd want it on Max too. Why would you put your properties on another streaming service and let them get the subscription dollars instead of you? It doesn't make any sense to me.
But I mean, as long as it's successful, ultimately that's still good. I'm pretty hopeful with the Batman animated series, Drew. I'm not shocked that Amazon's already given it 2 seasons. I'm sure some people will take that as a huge vote of confidence, and I'm sure on some level it is, but also like they're throwing around a lot of money right now because they're really trying to build up their own portfolio of shows. And so I'm not shocked that they'd give it 2 seasons just because I think they really need stuff to fill their portfolio out, you know what I mean? So I expect the show to be good, Drew. I'm pretty optimistic about it, but I think I wouldn't I think if like HBO or Netflix had gone ahead and given something a second season, that would be more notable to me, I guess, weirdly, than Amazon doing it, because I feel like Amazon just needs a hit.
Yeah, and Batman's a good choice to have for a hit.
And it seems like a pretty safe bet, so.
All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. The cast for DC's next animated film has been set with Jensen Ackles as Batman Officer Wayne, Stana Katic as Wonder Woman Diana Prince, and Darren Criss as Superman Agent Kent. In Justice League War World, the Justice League has been a loose association of superpowered individuals, but when they are swept away to War World, a place of unending brutal gladiatorial combat, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman and the others must somehow unite to form an unbeatable resistance able to lead the entire planet to freedom. Justice League War World will be released sometime this summer, and it has been designated rated R.
I'm excited to check this out, Drew. I know one of the headlines I saw confirmed Jensen Ackles as Batman, and I was like, is that really I was surprised that that was a headline, only because it is supposed to be the next one in this line of movies, and just like in the previous animated universe, it's the same voice actors doing the guys. Like, it was sort of like them. It would be a little bit like a headline for the next Batman movie being like, hey, Robert Pattinson confirmed to be playing Batman. Like, yeah. We know. I'm excited. I am, like I said, I've enjoyed some of the films so far that I've seen. I know I really didn't like Green Lantern, but like the Justice League one was really good. The Justice Society was really good. Superman film was good. I really need to check out the 2 Long Halloween films, but apart from Green Lantern, I've really liked this new universe that we're in right now, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with this film. I think this might be their first real Justice League film.
Well, it
That
sounded
might be wrong, but
from the
I think it is.
description of it, it sounds like they're building the Justice League from this or in this movie, because
Yeah,
it's.
well, it's been sort of being built in the background a bit. So in the JSA film, they get the idea for the Justice League, essentially. And then we saw in Green Lantern that the team does now exist, right? But it wasn't really like the team was there. And the film acknowledged its existence. We didn't really see much of it. So it feels like, so like the team's been there, but I think this is their first time really doing like really showing the team fully.
Okay, that makes sense. This is what they're calling the Tomorrowverse, correct? Okay.
Yeah, the Tomorrowverse. Yeah. Which is kind of a weird name, I don't know, but whatever. It doesn't really mean anything to me, so it's fine.
Right, and moving on to our last bit of DC news. Netflix announces that Sweet Tooth has been renewed for a third and final season, with production already completed on the final batch of episodes. Surprising, but it makes sense because that kid actor is only gonna get older.
I agree completely with you, Drew. It was one of those, like, I initially, like, the headline was just that it got renewed. I was like, oh, that's fantastic. And then when I read further and saw that they had already filmed season three, I was like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. But that, like you said, that's really smart because, like you said, the kid's gonna get, it's gonna grow up quick. They would run into the problem that Shazam had, where kid actors aren't kid actors anymore. So I think that's really smart. And there's a clear, definitive end in sight too. So you're not gonna get caught off guard or like be left hanging in limbo. Like, is this the last season? Or, you know what I mean? So it's nice. I'm glad we've got two more seasons of the show, which is really exciting. I very much enjoyed the first one. I like the idea of filming them back to back because, you know, your kids stay kids for the show. I think it's really smart. I'm really looking forward to it, Drew.
I am too. And season two is out on Netflix right now, but we'll be reviewing it later this summer after we finished Flash and Superman and Lois. So I'm looking very forward to checking it out. That's for sure. All right. Well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Pardon the interruption. We'll bring you back to your podcast in just a moment. But first, promo for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Here on the ESO Network, three hosts recommend this podcast.
I recommend it.
I recommend it.
And I recommend it.
On the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, it's a slice of life as we discuss literally anything in the universe. Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Here to serve all of your needs.
Wednesday, I'm here with you people. It's like wild.
No pizzas were harmed in the creation of this podcast.
What you gonna do, brothers and sisters, when thousands of geeky fans descend on Atlanta for 5 days and nights of the grandest con of them all? You can prepare by training, eating your vitamins, saying your prayers, and checking out the Dragon Con report each and every month leading up to the show. Watch or listen and let Dragon Con mania run wild on you!
And we're back! But before we can get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers!
Spoilers.
Spoilers. We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Danger Street number 5. Orion tells Warlord to move out of his way. When Warlord does not comply, Orion fires on him. Starman fights back. Orion states that he will have what is his. Starman replies, "The boy is dead, and I will save him." The lady cop is working on paperwork when there is a loud crash that causes her to land on the floor and all her furniture to be knocked over, including her desk. The dingbats climb up a ladder of a local building and see the battle going on between Orion and Starman. They decide they need to go avenge Goodlooks. Starmaker is on set having a talk with his main actress when Manhunter shows up to kill him. Starmaker falls to his knees begging for his life. Purple smoke appears around the gun and Manhunter cannot fire it. Frustrated, Manhunter throws the gun down. Manhunter tries to punch Starmaker, but the purple smoke appears again around his fist, not allowing him to do so. Manhunter walks away defeated. Starmaker insults him as he walks away. Another member of the Green Team is on a boat giving a speech. Their mass protector falls over in exhaustion from overextending his power. While Orion and Starman continue to battle, Warlord takes Goodlook's coffin from his grave and puts it on the back of his convertible. Batman pays a visit to Jack Ryder to tell him there are no outsiders. It is just a lie told for power. Jack replies, "Just because you don't see something doesn't mean it isn't there. You're not the one with X-ray vision." Jack tells Batman he doesn't get to control what he says. The Green Team member on the boat asked the masked man that he thought the Manhunters were in space. The masked man answered that there is a religious sect that has been operating here on Earth for many, many years. they originate from some misunderstanding with the true alien manhunters who visited Earth 1,000 years ago. They believe they were given some mission back then. It's a cult dedicated to that lie. The manhunters have been waiting for some time for the rise of a great evil, so they are hunting the men who will make the sky fall. Since the masked man is having issues trying to protect all three members left of the Green Team, the one on the boat offers him a deal to just protect him. Warlord almost runs into the Dingbat's four-wheeler while texting Starman while he's driving. Warlord turns around to shout at the kids and then crashes right into the side of the lady cop's patrol car. Goodluck's coffin goes flying off the back of the convertible into the air and then smashes on the ground. Starman has defeated Orion and then falls on top of him in exhaustion, declaring he won. The Dingbats cock their gun, ready to kill Starman. Starmaker is lying on a couch when the Manhunter attempts to kill him again by choking him. There is no magic that saves Starmaker this time. To be continued.
Drew, do you know how many issues this is supposed to be? So it really feels like it's coming to a head, but I also can't imagine next issue isn't that with the last issue.
I'm not sure how many it's supposed to be. I just assumed it was 12.
And I'm hoping it's 12, but man, I thought things escalated significantly this issue.
They did, and I could be wrong. It could be possible they're going to end it with 6. I could see it possibly ending next issue. I mean, you're right. Things are coming to a head, so that's very possible. It's very interesting.
I hope it's just selfishly because I'm really enjoying it. But narratively, Drew, I have no clue how this is supposed to end. But if you told me it ended next issue, I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't know what that would look like, but I could see it. He just hit us with a ton of plot progression of this issue. It was all really good. I have to admit, it wasn't super clear to me why the Manhunter was unable to kill the kid. It felt a little unclear whether it was some sort of guilt or ultimately what was proven to be magical inability. And I like that he clarified that later, because initially when I read that scene, I honestly wasn't sure how to interpret that, Drew. I was like, I don't really understand why he wouldn't want to kill the kid. He's already done it a couple times. Yeah, later in the issue, I was like, oh, I understand. So in the issue's defense, I mean, they explain it, and I think it works. I honestly think King wanted it to be a little unclear what was going on there.
Yeah, I'm glad he clarified it too, because otherwise I wouldn't have got it either. I'd have been like, okay, what was the deal with that? But it made perfect sense. One of the things I was very happy with, because I even mentioned it last time we reviewed this, was the Manhunters. Being confused about them, because at first I thought it was the ones from space, because, you know, it looked exactly like them. And then him explaining the whole thing with there being a cult built around them coming from 1,000 years before made total sense. I'm glad he explained that here, because it cleared it up.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm really interested in who that masked guy is with the magic powers. And obviously the Green Team has hired him to protect them. But I got to admit, the guy doesn't seem so superhero-ish. You know what I mean? Because it looked by the end of the issue, we see that the one kid's getting choked, and it looks like, you know, he's taking money from the one on the boat to just protect him.
I get the impression, I agree, Drew, I don't think he's particularly heroic. I also don't know that he feels like a true mercenary to me. Like, he felt like something Deathstroke would do, too. Like, there's no morals involved. It's purely whoever the highest bidder is. I don't think he likes the people that he's working for at all. And so I think any opportunity for him to be like, oh, you mean I don't have to keep one of these little jerks alive? Sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And those kids, the Green Team kids, those are not good kids.
They're terrible. They're awful. They are truly awful, which is such an interesting juxtaposition to have just absolutely heinous stuff that they say and do, and the fact that they're kids. I think it's just, I know that these are pre-existing characters, Drew, but you know that they weren't like this in their old comics, not to this level. It's been such an interesting writing decision. It is so interesting reading those scenes and seeing it coming from a kid just makes it kind of, I don't know, those lines kind of stick with you more because you're really thinking about it. Like, you know what I mean? Like wow, like a kid saying that.
Yeah.
Another moment that I really am interested in, I was surprised at, Drew, in a good way, was the Creeper doubling, like getting pissed off at Batman and doubling down on essentially misinformation crusade. Like, he gets away from the outsiders, but now he's essentially, because he's pissed off at Batman, yelled at him, he's using his platform to essentially convince people that superheroes are evil now too. It caught me a little off guard because it felt like the normal option would be some sort of pseudo redemption arc for the Creeper, right? And instead we get a moment where he could, like, he gets confronted by Batman, who's essentially telling him, like, you know what you're doing is wrong, stop it. And instead of stopping it, he doubles down. That was really interesting to me. And it's one of those things, like, it surprised me a little bit, but it also makes sense because what's his fairy tale nickname within this story? The Ogre, right? And if he was a prince, he probably changes his mind there, right?
Right, like that makes sense.
You can kind of almost predict certain things that are going to happen. Like, he's referred to as an ogre. Obviously, like, it made sense, you know, the way that the Creeper is as a character to begin with, but then it's sort of like personality wise, right? There's something evil in there too.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where this is going to go, and it could possibly end next issue. That's a good possibility, but we'll see. It's interesting that Tom King took all these, third-rate characters, fourth-rate characters,
and threw
them all together.
Very obscure characters.
Yes.
I had never heard of the Green Team.
I hadn't either. So, but it's been interesting seeing this story come together. That's for sure.
Good. Yeah. I'll be a little disappointed if it ends next issue, Drew, because I'm enjoying it and I'm not ready for it to end. But I don't know. It does kind of feel like we're moving towards, if not, it's a minimum at least a sort of halfway point, right? And we're gonna get like a pseudo new arc coming out of that. There's definitely action is definitely coming to a head next issue. Whether that's the true finale or the mid-season finale, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Superman Lost Number 2. Bruce Wayne calls Lois Lane to give her information on a story she is working on. He also checks in on Clark, who is lying on the floor in a fetal position. Lois has to remind Clark to breathe because he's got used to holding his breath. Somewhere in the galaxy, alien scavengers find Superman floating in space holding his breath. They bring him aboard their ship. Superman explains how he tried to collapse the singularity from an artificial black hole drive. The ship jumped and him with it. The aliens locate Superman's planet, which is the third from the sun. The aliens take Superman home for 3,200 credits. Superman tells them he doesn't have any money, and they just shoot him out of the airlock. When Superman sees two moons orbiting this planet on his way through the atmosphere, he realizes this isn't Earth. When Superman lands on the planet, he tries to communicate with the humanoid life there. They are afraid of him and run away. Superman notices they are wearing respirators because the air is polluted. Superman also has to adjust his flying because that gravity is heavier here. When Superman flies, it feels like he's carrying a tank with him. Superman comes across an ice wall, but he can't read what it says. On the other side, Superman finds a paradise compared to the rest of the planet. A man in a cape named Victor tells Superman that he did not heed the warning on the Great Wall. Superman replies, he couldn't read it. Victor replies, dead zone, do not pass. Victor states he's the leader of the Republic, the people's friend. Superman asks how he can help the people of Newark. Victor states you can't and neither can I. It's not ours to violate the will of the people, even when they're idiots. Victor tells Superman that they cannot help him. They can give him a few meager supplies and a personal survival kit and their best wishes. Superman thanks Victor. Before leaving, Superman suggests naming this agricultural region that is considered a toxic wasteland Kansas. I don't know about you, Cletus, but I found this planet very interesting.
I found it interesting, Drew, but I found the adventure to be, it's a weird criticism, Drew, and I will fully admit that, but it was almost a little too normal, if that makes, like, knowing what the crux of this story is, which is Superman dealing with extreme PTSD from being lost for how many years? And then this story was good. Don't get me wrong, Drew. It was a nice story. The planet was interesting. I totally agree with all of that. But it was normal. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't feel like it was the first step towards a extremely traumatizing trial of events that Superman goes through.
Yeah, I have to say, yeah, his visit to that planet wasn't traumatizing to him in any way. But it did
now,
feel
not
like
that everything has to do that, but it was just it was one of the things, Drew. I read the issue, and as I was reading, I was enjoying it. I was totally into the story, because so, I don't want to be clear. It is not a poorly written comic at all. It's very good. But after I finished, I was like, wait, I didn't really feel like a Superman Lost issue, though. You know, it felt a little bit like that. Remember Tom King had that mini series that he was doing for the giant DC Walmart issues?
Oh yeah.
It felt a little like one of those stories.
To me,
when Superman essentially just like visits a random planet and inspires them. So King's story was when he was trying to save that girl, and he was like going through all these different mini adventures that, again, were kind of demonstrated why he's Superman. They were all kind of relatively self-contained trips. That's what this felt like. I don't want to, like, it's weird to say that that's bad. I don't think it is. It didn't jive with what the rest of the book was about. Like, the start of the issue is Superman unable, like, he's sleeping on the floor, not breathing, because he's gotten so used to not breathing in space. And then we get the first adventure of this, it clearly traumatizing trip, and it's normal. You know what I mean? Like, alien, sure, but like, it feels like it's just a Tuesday in Superman's life.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. One of the things I got, to me, when I was reading about the planet, it felt like, to me, the writer was trying to real world stuff. Like the line where he says, "It's not ours to violate the will of the people, even when they're idiots." You know, it kind of felt like he's making statements about things, you know, how the planet is. When Superman gets there, you know, you got people living in the bad part of the planet, but there's this whole nice area of the planet that nobody's living in because they've named it a toxic wasteland, and it's not. And you know, he's not going to go against the will of the people, even though, you know, they're idiots for living in the polluted area with the respirators, when there's on the other side of the ice wall, there's this beautiful world.
Right.
So I don't know. It just felt like he was trying to make some sort of commentary.
Oh yeah. It's a Chris Priest book. Yes.
So I don't know. I just found that interesting. I don't know. I was intrigued by this world, even though Superman's not really spending any time here.
Yeah, no, and again, I totally agree. It's not a totally fair criticism to be laying, and I don't even know if that criticism is the right thing. More of just like, once I finished the comic, I was like, oh, huh. I don't know that that was really what I was expecting this issue to be. I agree, Drew. I found the world interesting. I liked even the aliens that he was interacting with that essentially were hoping to make a quick profit off of him, and when he didn't have anything, they just dumped him. Like, that, all of that was good. I think it's a good issue of a comic. It's just not what I thought it was going to be, given everything else that's been going on around it story-wise.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. Even when I read that first issue, it wasn't what I was expecting, so. I mean, it's still a good story, so. Still interested
in it. Yeah, like I said, I would not dissuade anybody from checking this issue out. I definitely think it's still worth reading. It's a very different take on Superman, not in terms of power or portrayal necessarily, but you're just getting, it's not really the type of story that we've seen before where, I mean, Superman's fine, right? But not, I don't know, it's different, and I do like that, and I'm excited to get more of this story, because I do think at some point the other shoe will drop and we will see some moments from his journey that were not pleasant.
Right? Yeah, I mean, how often do you...
I was expecting it to start sooner. And I'm not saying that he was wrong not to do that. That's just not what I was expecting.
How often do you see Superman curled up on the floor in a fetal position?
Right.
You don't. So, yeah, this, you are seeing a different take on Superman. even though
Don't feel like he's doing a miss. Like, I think some people could argue, Drew, that that's missing the, like, not portraying Superman well or doing it right. But I wouldn't. I feel like he's set the groundwork. There's the mystery there. We don't really know what happened, but, like, I feel like he did enough to set the premise up that, like, I can totally buy this, that Superman would be really thrown off by essentially being isolated and not abandoned isn't the right word, but unable to get home for who knows how long.
Wasn't it like 30 years or something like that?
Yeah, it was like 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, something like that.
A long time. Especially this is a Superman who's married to Lois. Like, this isn't just like, you know, single Superman. This is a guy who has who is not just Superman, but as a person, has a life, a wife to get back to. Yeah, no, I'm totally in on the premise of this story.
Yeah, I am too. I'm looking forward to read more things, more adventures, see what happens to him. All right, well, let's move on to our last comic for this week. Lazarus Planet, Revenge of the Gods, number 3. Washington, D.C. Cheetah finds Diana sobbing. Diana tells her that she sold the fate of the humankind for the fate of her sisters, and it was all a lie. Olympus. Billy Batson is lying on the stone-cold floor of a dungeon cell. He gets up and shouts the word Shazam, changing into a weakened, wrinkly captain who seems to be even weaker than before. A mouse comes bounding down the stone steps, asking Billy if he is just going to sit there. It is the goddess Hecate. She was the one that sent Billy the vision last issue. Yara Fleur is with her. Hecate disguises Billy as one of her priestesses so they can make it outside of the palace. The trio runs into Hermes and Aphrodite, but is only temporary nuisance as they are busy flirting with one another. Hecate, Yara Fleur, and Billy make their way outside to find Hippolyta waiting for them. Hippolyta touches Billy on the forehead, returning power to him. Back in Man's World, Diana and Barbara are faced with an army of gods and beasts. Ida, Steve, and Siggy show up to help. Shortly after, Yara Fleur and the captain join them. Diana battles Hermes, who criticizes her for fighting against the gods. The lasso of truth is something not even the gods can break. Hermes grabs the lasso and sends an explosion of power into it, knocking everyone to the ground. The captain is lying on the ground when the mysterious hooded figure appears and helps Billy up. Billy asks him if he brought an army with him. I don't need an army, the hoodie guy responds, pulling down his hood, for Ares, god of war, is an army unto himself. The war rages on in Wonder Woman number 798. We also had a backup story called Divine Intervention. The Amazons continue to battle against Hades' army of the undead. Queen Nubia has chosen the Stymphalian wings, which grant her the power of speed and flight. Faruka yields Sorbic's razor, which burns when yielded to protect others, but also healing wounds inflicted in battle. As Hades' endless horde attacks, Queen Nubia realizes their numbers are thinning. Nubia asks Philippus to ready their weapons, but she has vanished. On the other side of Themyscira, Philippus prays to her love and light, Hippolyta. She is even ready to sacrifice herself, but Hippolyta appears and tells Philippus to stay her hand. They kiss. The other patron goddesses of the Amazons appear. Artemis, Hestia, Aphrodite, Demeter, and Athena. They've come to fight alongside the Amazons. To be concluded.
I wish there had been... I know that they are trying to build some mystery as to what's going on with the wizard, Drew, but I would really appreciate a little more clarity as to what's going on with him, because I don't believe that it's just him willingly doing this.
It doesn't make sense to me.
No, and I know that they want to do a twist, but I don't like that the twist seems to be it's going to get revealed in the final issue. I feel like I want to have known what's going on with that sooner, personally. Again, I understand you want to preserve twists and mysteries and stuff with the show or with the story, but like I don't think most people reading the story are going to believe that he's actually the antagonist of the story, right? And so maybe that is the twist, that really he is just gone bad, but that would be a bold and, I think, frankly, incorrect change. So I don't know. You know what I mean? Like I would have preferred a little more clarity on that. Ares, the reveal of it being Ares, that totally makes sense. it's not, I remember I guessed Hermes, but like it makes sense. It makes complete sense that it's Ares. So that was, that jives.
I guessed Zeus, so I was wrong with that. Of course, Zeus is dead, but I have a feeling he's going to be coming back by the end of the story.
Yeah. This has been okay. It's not been great, but it's not been bad. I would personally describe it as okay.
I agree with you. It's an okay story. And it's still nice to have a Wonder Woman event, because we haven't really had those. I don't remember Wonder Woman events from the past. I've always remembered Batman getting events and Superman getting events in their own titles, but not Wonder Woman. Of course, this has kind of popped out of her title, but I still find it interesting, but it isn't the greatest story out there. And I am happy that we're getting to see Billy in the story, because, I don't know, it's felt like he's just been absent lately. So I'm glad to see that they're trying to bring him back again, which we know he's getting his own title later on. And I wish they'd bring Mary into the story a little more instead of just focusing solely on Billy, especially with it being a female title. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
All right, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
I love that Star Trek does what adventure programs do. It's fun characters going on adventures wearing colorful outfits, but it tries to be more than that. It tries to say something more about humanity and tries to encourage us to be better people.
I love that it gives a really positive and really hopeful view of the future.
I like that you never know what you get with Trek, from Captain Pike to Picard to Captain Proton.
I like the Ferengi.
Earth Station Trek, a show where we talk about Star Trek from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between.
The Earth Station 1 podcast has been bringing your inner geek out to play for the past 13 years. Over this time, we've seen things change in the world of geek and podcasting alike.
And your friends here at ESO are looking to change also. We are now giving you double the fun by coming to you twice a week, and not just in audio, but now you can see our lovely faces up on YouTube.
Join Mike and Mike as we celebrate our 700th episode and beyond. Earth Station 1 is proud to be a founding member of the ESO Network.
We're back. Let's talk The Flash, Season 9, Episode 9. It's my party, and I'll die if I want to. Team Flash throws a surprise birthday party for Barry. John Diggle, Wally West, ex-Captain Singh, and Captain Kramer are all in attendance. Diggle gives Barry a gift, Oliver's bow. They thought it was lost when Earth 38 was destroyed, but Argus found it in National City. Chester gives Allegra a necklace that will hide her face when she's using her powers. A toast is made to Barry with champagne and sparkling cider. After drinking from their glass, everyone passes out. Bloodwork appears to Barry, stating he has escaped from Argus. Bloodwork tries to convince Wally West to join him in creating a multiverse where no one has to watch their loved ones die ever again. Bloodwork manages to take over Wally. Bloodwork uses Wally to kill Barry, telling him that he hates him for taking over his life. When Barry opens his eyes next, Oliver Queen is standing over him in a forest. Barry has died. Oliver states that when he took on the power of the Spectre, he thought he was simply creating Earth Prime, but instead he created a new multiverse to replace the one that had fallen. The Red Death actually came from Earth 4125. Oliver explains to Barry that Ramsey Rosso plans to use Wally to infect the whole multiverse. Chester wakes up because he didn't drink hardly any champagne. A possessed Allegra breaks the necklace that Chester made her. Allegra goes after Chester, but Keown shows up and freezes all the water in her body. Apparently, that doesn't cause death. Wally opens a gateway to the multiverse and Ramsey sends his blood through. Oliver brings Barry back to life along with himself. Oliver is only allowed to intervene when the multiverse is in danger. Barry battles against Wally while Oliver fights Bloodwork zombies. Barry is able to convince Wally to fight back against Bloodwork. They hug when Wally breaks free of Bloodwork's control. Keown uses her powers to unfreeze Diggle. Diggle coughs up Bloodwork's blood and is free of his control. When Bloodwork goes to attack Green Arrow, Spartan blasts him with a bazooka from behind. Oliver Queen and John Diggle have reunited against Bloodwork. Barry and Wally work together to tie up Bloodworks' monster with lightning rope. Oliver tells Ramsey Rosso that he has failed this city, then proceeds to shoot an energy-powered arrow into the breach. Bloodwork loses control over the city. Ramsey has lost his Bloodwork powers. Oliver states he has cleansed the multiverse of his infectious cells, including the ones inside of him. Barry's birthday party resumes, with Oliver joining in on the festivities for a short time. Oliver tells John that the cube was designed to tempt him, but in the end, John did the right thing. Now all of his brightest days are ahead of him because he will spend them with his family. Oliver and Barry share a beer at the bar. Barry asks Oliver if he is doing enough with his powers. Oliver tells Barry that the bolt of lightning chose him and to never forget it. Oliver wishes Barry a happy birthday and disappears.
Having Stephen Amell back as Green Arrow was nice, Drew. It was really cool to see him back in that role, and I really like him as Green Arrow. And most of his scenes were pretty good. But good God, Drew, the rest, it's just, the show can't help itself. It's just, like, aggressively stupid at every turn. I know I laughed. I couldn't help it when you were talking about the scene where Keown freezes the pseudo-zombies. Oh, don't worry, she's fine. No, she's not, Drew. You freeze someone's internal blood and organs, they're dead.
I know. I thought that was ridiculous myself. I'm like, really?
It was so stupid. And the thing that frustrated me is that the show knew it was stupid and still hand-waved it. It's like, don't worry about it. They're fine. Because we're clearly aware that that should kill someone, but it's fine. Oh my God. I felt bad. This isn't, to be clear, this is not Amell's fault. The line is what it is. But when they defeat Bloodwork, they shoot the arrow in, and he's like, "You've taken away my powers. You've turned me, you've given me back my ALS. And Arrow's like, "Actually, it's cured, courtesy of my powers as the Spectre." And I was like, what are we doing? It was so stupid. It was just like, God forbid any slightly unpalatable thing come out of this episode. "Oh, no, don't worry. You almost murdered everybody in the entire multiverse, but I made sure to cure your disease, and I'm going to lay it out in really clunky dialogue."
I heard one of the conditions of Stephen Amell coming back for this episode was that he got to wear his Green Arrow outfit. And also, he didn't want to wear the Spectre outfit he wore during the crisis or whatever, because he didn't like it. So
I have conflicting feelings about that, Drew. Like, I get it. He was Green Arrow, and you want to see him as Green Arrow. But also, like, it's whatever, but also he could kind of get over it. I'm sorry, but like, the Spectre is the Spectre. They really wanted, they could put him in green underwear and a cape, Drew, and he could really look like the Spectre. I'm just saying. I don't know. Whatever. It's whatever. I'm not going to complain about it, but like, he can get over it. The other thing that really pissed me off, Drew, I've mentioned a number of times how angry The Flash made me last season when they tried to gaslight us into blaming us, the fans, for daring to think that Diggle could be Green Arrow or be Green Lantern. And then this episode, like, "Yeah, that cube was designed to tempt you." Once again, fans, idiots, you were tempted by it, dummies. "But your brightest days, wink, 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 are ahead of you." Which one is it, show? Which one is it? You cannot keep giving us the middle finger and being like, "Yeah, no, he was never going to be Green Lantern. You're dumb. You're dumb for thinking that." But also, wink, wink, brightest day. Like, I just want the show to just look us. I really, what I want, Drew, is I want them to cut at one point. I want the showrunner to step in front of the camera, look us in the eyes, and tell us to F off. Because it would be true to what the show is doing.
For a minute there, I thought you wanted the showrunner to step in front of the camera and apologize to you.
No, that wouldn't be. Why would he do that, Drew? I wouldn't even bat an eye. If anything, it would be my favorite scene in 3 years because it would finally at least be the show admitting what they're doing. It is such every scene, Drid, almost every episode has had some sort of party at the end of it where the cast members all get together and have a little fun. Because I was telling Aaron this as we were watching, like, none of these people give a crap about this show anymore. They're all just in it to cash one last check, which, to be clear, good for them. If somebody's paying them to do it, that's fine. But, like, it also, you see it in the episodes. Like, they are building in parties into these episodes so that they can have an excuse to let loose and have some fun because we don't actually care what we're filming, so we're just going to film you guys having fun, and we're going to pay you to do it. Or we could actually tell a story, but, I mean, why would we do that?
You're right. They either have party or brunch or something at the end of every episode.
Drew, I'm telling you, the show is so... But like brazenly lazy and self-serving. Like they're just doing it for the check. And that's, again, I don't blame the actors at all. If they're going to offer you the money, you should take the money and do the gig. Absolutely. But like someone in charge of running the show should actually care about what they're putting on the screen. The only thing that they drew, the only thing that was redeeming about this episode is that they had a Melback, and he was good in that role because he was always good in that role. Otherwise, it was another absolute garbage episode of television.
The other thing I wanted to point out, because I really noticed it in this episode, was the absence of Joe during something important like Barry's
his
birthday.
His 30th birthday? Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, it's his big birthday, but he's not here because the actor's not on the show, right? But we're not going to explain it at all. Again, because we're lazy.
That's what it boils down to. It's to the point where it is getting very blatant. They don't care.
It is very brazen to the level of which there's just no effort at all. I don't know what else to say. Like they just no one on the show cares right now, and I don't blame the actors for that. But someone's got to be the adult in the room and actually care about what they're doing because this is the legacy of this show, Drew. I think you can get so bad that a show gets remembered more for how it ended than for how it was for most of its run. And I would personally argue, Drew, that Flash, frankly, has been bad for more of its run than it was good. And they're not doing themselves any favors with this train wreck of a finale.
They're not. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Superman and Lois, Season 3, Episode 6 of Sound Mind. Clark is in group therapy for spouses of cancer patients. Lois asked him how it was later. Clark said it was fine, but it wasn't for him. Deadline wants to speak to Superman. Deadline wants Superman to take him to Bruno Mannheim because he's sick. X-ray vision confirms that Deadline has tumors everywhere in his body. Superman takes Deadline to Bruno, but Bruno tells Superman he's not a doctor. Take him to a hospital. Jordan has been training at the fortress while Jonathan has been training at the firehouse. Kyle has Jonathan washing a fire truck all day long while wearing a shirt with the name Rusty on it. When Jordan tells Clark he's ready for some live action, Clark makes him do more advanced training. Jordan gets frustrated as he beats the bad guys and then gets snipe attacked with some lasers. Sophie goes missing while Sarah and Jonathan are studying for a math midterm. When they find Sophie at the fairgrounds, Jonathan has a heart-to-heart with Sophie about feeling alone. Lois gets upset with Clark when he won't acknowledge the fact that she could die from her cancer. Lois states that cancer is her supervillain. Clark apologizes to Jordan. They are interrupted when Lois calls for help. Clark tells Jordan to stay put and zooms off. When Superman goes searching for Lois, he falls for a trap set by Onomatopoeia. He's hit with 3 different kryptonite guns. When Lois comes home without Superman, her and Jordan realize something is wrong. Lois sends Jordan to help Superman. Jordan takes out 3 of the men with kryptonite guns. Onomatopoeia blasts Jordan to the ground. Jordan is then knocked unconscious with a blast from the kryptonite gun. Superman yells no and takes out Onomatopoeia. Superman is relieved when Jordan starts breathing again. When Clark and Jordan return home, Clark reveals that kryptonite doesn't affect Jordan the same way as him. Clark has a talk with Lois and reveals that he feels powerless because he can't keep her safe from the cancer. Clark states he will still be optimistic, but will be more present for her. After Lana finds out about Kyle and Chrissy at the convenience store, Kyle decides to ask Chrissy to officially be his girlfriend. Clark returns to group therapy for spouses of the cancer patients. Onomatopoeia returns to Bruno's hideout and reveals that Superman is still alive. Her powers are fading and she is getting worse. Onomatopoeia removes her mask to reveal she is the same cancer patient that Lois went to dinner with. That was a very interesting reveal.
And it was. Drew, I'm still not clear if that... Do we know for sure who that character is supposed to be in terms... Not. I know we know it's the woman, but I mean, like, is that onomatopoeia? Is that a show creation?
You mean that character?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about onomatopoeia, so I don't know who in the comics the identity is of onomatopoeia. Now, in the show, they don't reveal who she is. I don't know what her name is, honestly. But I have a feeling, it felt like to me she's important to Bruno somehow. I think they're going to reveal that next episode. I just don't think they... I think they were keeping it close to the vest because they didn't want to reveal too much before they revealed it was her and that, you know, she has some sort of relationship with Bruno. Whether it's his sister or girlfriend, maybe wife, I don't know.
I got the impression wife, but that could be wrong.
Yeah, so I'm sure they're going to reveal it next episode. I'd be surprised if they didn't.
This was a really good episode, Drew. They've been killing it this season. I have really, really enjoyed the Lois storyline, both her professional and personal storylines. Obviously, they've blended together quite a bit. I was amused that the show sort of built in their constant forgetting of the other daughter. It made it a plot line. Like, yeah, we forget that this character exists about 99% of the episodes. Oops. Hey, what if we made a plot about that?
It worked.
It worked great. I mean, she should literally that. I'm pretty sure it's been the same actress all three seasons, I think. I'm pretty sure. That poor girl has probably gotten, what, 6 episodes worth of work total across 3 seasons?
Something like that. But, you know, a lot of times, though, thinking back, she's in the background quite a bit when they're doing stuff without any lines or anything. So she's there a little more than you think, but you're right. The show forgets about her a lot of times. And this was a good storyline, you know, kind of point that out, but also give her and Jonathan a connection and kind of point out how Jonathan feels alone sometimes. Cause it makes sense, especially with his brother having powers and him not. I can see how he can feel like the third wheel sometimes.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, he is frequently sidelined on the show. I think it's one of the reasons why it's been relatively easy for them to switch actors. I mean, again, we both prefer this actor. I maintain the last guy was not bad either. He was never the main brother. Like, it's always been more focused on Jordan. So, yeah, I thought that connection made a lot of sense.
But we have been getting more story focused on Jonathan this season. You know, we got him working at the firehouse now, which, you know, it's funny they were making him, you know, kind of go through the initiation wearing that rusty shirt and all that. So that's kind of funny. And it also feels like they're getting Kyle a little more involved this season too.
Kyle definitely feels like a bigger character for sure.
Yeah. His relationship with Chrissy and, you know, kind of, you know, Jonathan, he's kind of, you know, training Jonathan now. So yeah, his story has been bigger this season. Overall, the story feels a lot more tight knit. You know what I mean?
I agree completely. Yeah. There's a lot less wasted time. The story flows a lot better. This has been a very good season so far. I have very few complaints. It's been minor nitpicks at best with these episodes. Because even the first season, which I liked a lot of it, Drew, like, the football scenes were so bad. So, you know what I mean? Like, even in that first season that was mostly good, there was some stuff there that I really didn't like. There's not been almost anything I haven't liked. Very few complaints. Even, like, when I had the problem with the conflict between Lana and her daughter, they redressed that the next episode. Like, my biggest complaint that I thought they were going to let her get off the hook for insulting her mom, they didn't really do that. And it was refreshing. I was like, oh, what a refreshing change. This is just, it's been a really good season. It's like, and I don't know if part of it is my bar has been lowered so drastically by the other CW shows that, like, anything that is even a little bit good just blows me out of the water. I don't know. But I have very much enjoyed this season. It is such a breath of fresh air when, like, most of the time when that CW logo pops up, I'm almost getting PTSD, Drew, where I'm like, oh, God, no.
You don't have to watch it very much longer. I still, even as good as Superman and Lois is this season, I'm still afraid it's going to be canceled by the end of the season. Still my fear. And I'd love to see the show continue on, so it's really good.
Man, I would be really, really surprised if the show continued, but we'll see. The only thing, this season has been better, so that does, I feel like that does help its odds, right? Like, if it continued its downward trend and had another lackluster season, I feel like it'd be a lock. But if they end on a high note, there's a minuscule chance it has life maybe somewhere.
You got a little more optimistic than I am, which is unusual.
I want to be clear. I'm a minuscule. Like, I don't want to make it sound like I think it's going to, like, very small chance. But I do think the quality of the season, especially if it continues through to the end, it would be very beneficial to any possible chance that it has.
Yeah. All right. Well, that wraps up our episode for this week. Do you have a shout out, Cletus?
Yeah. Tomorrow is Free Comic Book Day. I would highly encourage people to go check out their local comic book stores. It's always a good time. I've been inconsistently been able to go the last couple of years, but I would very consistently go in the years before that. Certainly planning on picking that routine up again. It's a great way to support your local comic book stores. It's a great way to catch up on new stuff that both Marvel, DC, and other publishers or stuff that they're coming out with that maybe might catch your attention. There's usually some pretty good deals at the stores that you go to. It's just a good time. I highly recommend people check it out.
So do I. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout-out congratulations to Cletus and Aaron for getting hitched. So how does it feel to be a married man?
Feels pretty good, Drew. Feels pretty good. Yeah, it was a really great time. It was a great day. It's been awesome.
So, yeah, I'm happy for you. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach us at our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Black Adam, Superboy, the Man of Tomorrow, Batman, Superman, World's Finest, Batgirls, Catwoman, Nightwing, The Flash, Superman, Wonder Woman, and of course our DC television shows, The Flash and Superman and Lois. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
In brightest day,
in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
I'm off.
Where are you going?
I've got to go punch a clock with my other boss.
I can see where this is going to be a long commute.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.